It is Jordan Spieth and it is Rory McIlroy. A little bit of desert golf this week out at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. We're going to get two out of the top three players in the world going toe-to-toe on the European Tour. Welcome in to a Tuesday edition of Monday Scramble. We're a day late, but we'll make up for it. I'm Will Gray, joined by Nick Menta. Nick, I don't know about you, but I spent my off day working. Hope yours was a little better. How about you?
Spent on my couch.
Oh, there you go. See, you
went. Better.
Yeah, that was better. That was better. Thoughts from the week that was, the week that we're going to preview here with the PGA Tour heading back to California, European Tour out in Abu Dhabi. Any thoughts?
I think if you had taken a list of PGA Tour winners from last year and asked the average golf fan who won the FedEx St. Jude, they probably would not have been able to come up with Fabian Gomez.
It would have taken a while. Yeah.
But everything seems like it's a little bit different for him now. This was a quality win in Sony. He's sort of secured his Olympic status, or you would at least think, unless Angel Cabrera does something
that Angel Cabrera
has done previously, admittedly.
Yeah.
But no, I think. This is just yet another guy we can add to the mix. He's maybe not a star on the level of Jordan Spieth, but you know, now we at least know who Fabian Gomez if we didn't know him before.
All right, we'll have more on Fabian Gomez later in the show, but here's what we've got for you on a Tuesday edition of Monday Scramble. Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy headline the field this week in Abu Dhabi. Sorry, Ricky Fowler. You're not quite making top billing right now.
Playing in that group.
He's in the other contenders, I suppose, along with guys like Martin Kaymer and Henrik Stenson. As we said, Fabian Gomez wins the Sony Open. Brandt Snedeker off to a great start early in 2016. Team Europe has woken up, realizes it is a Ryder Cup year. They crushed the Eurasia Cup. And Phil Mickelson making his 2016 debut. We haven't seen him in quite a while, but he'll be teeing it up out in Palm Springs. Should be a good week.
Big year for Phil.
Big year for
Phil. A lot of pressure for Phil. We will get into that.
We will get into that. But first, we have to start with a preview of the action in Abu Dhabi per the monitor,
behind
the graphic behind us. For the visual listeners, there is a picture here, but you've got Jordan at world number one, fresh off the 8-shot win at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. You've got Rory making his year debut, but really coming off the year that it didn't quite come out to what he thought it would with that poorly timed ankle injury.
First it was a lost year, and then it was an A, just not an A+.
It was three stages. Really good spring, terrible timing with the soccer game, and then he closes out winning the race to Dubai. So it can't be a bad year, but I think the expectations are really raised for him this year, both in terms of how he thinks his game is going to play out and the attempt to chase both Jordan and Jason Day.
And they're sort of very aware of this. You'll see athletes or golfers sometimes occasionally be like, I'm not worried about anybody else. I just focus on myself. But Jordan and Rory do seem to relish the opportunity to go head-to-head. Jordan was joking about this week, oh, had I known Rory was playing, I wouldn't have done it. You know, I wouldn't have gone to Abu Dhabi. So they're at least very aware of each other. And Spieth, you know, further made comment that, you know, he expects Rory to have a resurgent 2016, and he hopes to stand in the way of that. So these are two guys who are very aware of a budding rivalry and are sort of looking forward to going down that path.
Always adds to the proverbial narrative when both participants embrace it. And it's not like, as you said, Jordan and Rory, and even Jason Day to an extent, they're not shying away from this. They say, listen, I want to go toe-to-toe with these other guys. I want my best to show up when the other players are playing their best, and we'll see who comes out on top. Now, as we said, Jordan won by 8 shots a couple weeks ago in Hawaii. Do you feel like the pressure now shifts to Rory to kind of make a statement in the first tournament that they're sharing of the year to really get back at Jordan and say, listen, don't forget about me. I'm still right here. I'm going to nip it at your heels all spring.
Well, we're placing probably a little too much emphasis on
that
this.
Never happens.
Yes,
that never happens.
Just okay. So it's the first time they're playing in 2016. It's sort of a
first time one of them is playing in 2016.
And well, the
other one.
And now they're in the same field. It's sort of an irrelevant distinction, but we're going to make it. We're going to bring it up. There is some pressure on Rory moving forward, if not this week, moving forward this year, because he had a quality year last year and he got completely lost in the shuffle. This is a guy who won 4 times.
Yeah.
He won the DP World Championship. He won another race to Dubai. Won a World Golf Championship. You know, if you had looked in. He wins the PGA Championship at Valhalla. He's on top of the world.
You would have thought there was
Could you have thought a year later that he would not be number one? He wouldn't even be number two.
Right, that's it. I certainly did not expect anyone to catch him. I definitely didn't expect two guys to catch him, but I didn't expect other players to both win 5 times as Jordan and Jason Day did last year.
And his mental approach to how last year has changed a little bit. We just hinted at this a couple minutes ago. You know, at the Tour Championship, he was ready to write off the entire season as a lost year, and then suddenly he wins the DP World, and the year goes from a lost year to an A in his book, just not an A+, because he didn't win a major. But it was still a good year. I mean, by anybody else's account, to win four times, to win a race to Dubai, to win a WGC, Wells Fargo is a quality event with a good field. Had he won four times and, you know, somebody had gone back a year and told you that he wouldn't be number one?
You wouldn't have believed it.
So there is some pressure, and Jordan's already got a win this year. He's already picked up that win in Honolulu. It was a convincing win, so he's clearly carried the momentum from last year into 2016, and now we have to see if Rory can get rolling again.
We will see. We got some primetime golf this week for the viewers. 10 o'clock Eastern, Wednesday night, things kick off. Jordan and Rory are playing together at 10:40 p.m. Eastern in that first round, and they're joined by Ricky Fowler, who, as we alluded to earlier, is kind of getting lost in the shuffle here in terms of other people, and he's a top-ranked guy in this field. He's not quite on the status right now of Jordan and Rory, but he's a player to watch, along with several other guys in the field in Abu Dhabi, Martin Kaymer, Henrik Stenson. So who are you looking for, and what are your thoughts really on Fowler right now?
We always break Spieth, McIlroy, and Day off into a big three. Because it's convenient. We like using the word big three.
They've also
separated themselves in terms of the world golf ranking. So there is at least something behind this.
In the majors.
That. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
So they have separated themselves statistically, numerically. But we're always looking for the guy who can make that big three a big four. Sometimes we mention Patrick Reed.
See, I don't think we are. I think we really like a big three. I think it was annoying in the mid-2000s when you had four and you were trying. It didn't work well for discussion. I think three is the number.
Did anybody ever believe there was four? Like, was Retief Goosen really threatening Tiger's throne?
Retief Goosen, he won a couple majors. That counts for something. I just think that everything goes back to Arne Jack and Gary Player, and that we pine for that time, and we want everything to match. It's when we try and do cross-generational comparisons, which are impossible because the technology has changed, the courses have changed, everything, but we say, oh, well, how would it be if you have this group playing at their best versus this group from 40 years ago? So I think that for whatever reason, the golf industry is fixated on big three.
So are we taking Billy Casper and Ricky Fowler as the fours there?
I'll take Casper over Ricky Fowler, given the choice.
If the point is we're looking for somebody else who could crash the party and be number four in a big four, Fowler's at least usually one of the popular choices.
He's in the mix. He's upgraded from overrated, needs to win, to a legitimate top five,
right,
top ten player.
And here's another guy who like McIlroy, but to a slightly different degree, was lost in the shuffle last year despite having what ordinarily would have been a breakthrough year.
Yeah.
You know, there's no space when it comes to what Jason Day did and what Jordan Spieth did. But when you consider the finish that Fowler had at the Players' Championship, playing the last six holes, six under, he birdied 17, three times on Sunday.
Yep.
Wins the Scottish Open, which is an event that has sort of grown in its prestige over the last couple of years.
And wins it in convincing fashion with the birdie on 18.
Sure. And then takes down Stenson in a playoff event
Deutsche
in Boston.
Bank.
So by any other comparison and in any other year, we would be talking in more excited terms about Ricky Fowler than we are, but it's because of the two guys he'll be playing with this week in Abu Dhabi that he's just not getting that attention.
Right. Now, the guy that won the Players last year, or before Ricky Fowler did last year, was Martin Kaymer. Didn't quite have the 2015 season that he was looking for. Ended up losing his PGA Tour card.
So he didn't have a season, now he doesn't have a card.
It all went back to this tournament a year ago when I mean, I'm telling you, this story got lost in the shuffle. By the time we were recapping stories of the year, he blew a 10-shot lead on Sunday. Are you kidding me? How does that even happen?
A two-time major champion. You don't see it.
Exactly. You would think Gary Stahl would be the one that would blow a 10-shot lead to
nice
Martin
reference.
Kaymer. Well, he's the one that won. Someone had to win the tournament.
No one else knows. If you remember that Martin Kaymer blew a 10-shot lead, you certainly don't remember who won.
Well, Gary Stahl won, just like Fabian Gomez won in Memphis. But seriously, a 10-shot lead, that is crazy. And it's a tournament that he has dominated before. He loves that golf course like maybe no one else in this field. But there has to be some scar tissue with that. And I have to think that it did extend somewhat into his 2015 season where he just really never got close to another lead.
No, he didn't. And, you know, he played a little bit better late in the year. He had top 12s at both the Open Championship and the PGA. I think he had four top fives last year in total, two of them on the European Tour after that collapse. Yeah. But, look, he didn't even play enough events to keep his PGA Tour card. He doesn't seem overly concerned about it. He's now dropped down. This is a two-time major winner. He's now 30th in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, he only won that U.S. Open in 2014. He's down to 30th. He doesn't have a tour card anymore. Like I said, he doesn't seem all that broken up about it. He said earlier this week, I'm just going to keep playing the same schedule I have been, which is why he wasn't so concerned. But, no, this is a guy who seems like he's in need of a spark, in need of a boost. And For a guy who loved that golf course before a 10-shot collapse, you do have to wonder if now there's going to be some mental demons.
I think
the good old mental demons.
Oh, you and I both know those far too well. One other guy I'm interested in, not only this week, but moving on this year, is Henrik Stenson. 6 runner-up finishes last year. 3 out of the 4 playoff events, he finished second. I think that we're going to get to a point soon where you want to talk about a guy that needs a spark. Henrik Stenson needs a win.
Struggled to close last year on
multiple
occasions.
Just to get over the hump, the one that really sticks out, just because I had him in fantasy, was the Bay Hill collapse, where he just could not buy a putt. But he clearly is playing at a high level. He's up in the top 5 in the world ranking, along with guys like Fowler and Bubba Watson. But you really feel like one trophy is going to go a long way for him. There's a long list of guys that fit that billing, but I really think after a year, that was a great year. It was a good year that could have been a great year if he converts a couple of those. Now he's got a chance. But as we said earlier, 10 o'clock Wednesday night, primetime golf all week long out in Abu Dhabi.
Stenson at 10:30, and then the big 3/4 at 10:40.
Big two out of the three. Get your Meatloaf reference in there if you want. 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right?
Nice.
See? About that. All right, let's go back a couple days now, or a day and a half, because we're spanning the globe and spanning time zones. We're going early with the European Tour golf. We went late with the PGA Tour golf last week at the Sony Open, where Fabian Gomez came out of nowhere to not only contend at the Sony Open in Hawaii, but ultimately he beats Brant Snedeker on the second hole of a sudden death playoff, as you alluded to in the Open. This is now his second PGA Tour victory. The guy's 37 years old. He's been a pro since 2001, and now all of a sudden he has found the fire that he needed to get those chances, and now he's converted not once but twice in the PGA Tour.
It was a loaded leaderboard on Sunday, and he came from 4 shots back. He shoots 8 under 62 in the final round.
7 birdies in a row.
Yeah.
That'll get you in contention real quick.
That'll help.
Yeah.
Birdie's the last hole. When it didn't look like he was going to, he had hit a poor wedge into the 72nd green. He's sitting there from 22 feet off the apron, and suddenly the guy jars it, and Snedeker has to make a 4 of his own on the last hole just to force that playoff. It was a quality win. I thought he did exactly what he needed to in the playoff, despite the fact that we'll get into Snedeker in a bit. I didn't love his club selection.
I don't think Snedeker loved his club selection on 18 after the fact.
Well, let's just do that now.
He
hits driver 3 times on 18 on Sunday. And, you know, in regulation on the 72nd hole, it did not burn him. He drives it in the right rough, gets up towards the green, gets up now, makes birdie. Fine. Lines up on the right side of the tee box again. Pulls driver. Blasts it in the exact same spot, only this time he clips a tree, comes short of the green, does not get up and down. And it's only by virtue of the fact that Gomez didn't make birdie that this went to a second playoff hole. Probably should have been over there. And third time's not the charm. Yeah. There's the double cross right into the bunker. Makes 5. If you take less club on that hole, Gomez finally
figured it out.
I think he hit hybrid.
Yeah. Hit hybrid.
If you just take less club, Brant Snedeker probably has his 8th PGA Tour victory.
Yeah.
Didn't learn. He can blame the putter all he wants. It was the club selection.
Warning, this is about to go off the rails into golf nerd territory.
Yes.
But this reminded me of a couple years back, there was a playoff at the Travelers Championship between Ken Duke and Chris Stroud. And they
weren't kidding, were you?
No, I'm dead serious. So they were playing the 18th hole at TPC River Highlands, which is a little rinky-dink par 4 with a tough green. And they kept blasting.
I don't think the River Highlands people would appreciate it.
It's all right. Sorry, River Highlands people, but they kept blasting drivers, both of them, into this gap where they've got these 60, 65-yard in-between wedges that no one can get
on an uneven line.
Yes, and no one can get it within, like, 20 feet. And they keep playing this hole over and over. No one's making birdie on a 360-yard hole. And it's like, when are you guys going to wake up? And someone just hit a 3-iron and give yourself a full wedge.
And eventually, woke up.
Yeah, Ken Duke woke up at that one. Fabian Gomez woke up. Gomez, stay woke. And he's got the trophy now.
Regardless of my thoughts on his club selection, it is nice to see Brant Snedeker playing good golf again.
Yes, yes. A T3 in Maui, and now a playoff loss here.
To mention the big Franklin Templeton victory.
Franklin Templeton. Let's talk about how that was a springboard for his season. We're waiting
Maybe
on Jason
Duffner.
It was, Duffner.
Though. I mean, you know, it's a December event, and it doesn't get a lot of attention. But if you can show up and play some competitive golf and hit the ball well, maybe you can take some momentum. So, you know, shares the title there. T3 in Kapalua, runner-up now. And this is a guy who did not play great golf over the second half of last season.
Right.
So it's nice to see him going again, especially as he prepares for a title defense.
Well, I think, yeah, as you said, title defense coming up at Pebble Beach. But if you go back before that win at Pebble, he was outside the top 60 in the world ranking, wasn't in the Masters.
For a guy who used to be number 4 in the world.
Yes, he wasn't in the Masters or the U.S. Open. He wasn't in the WGC events, these tournaments he's used to playing. And he got that win. It led to those invitations. And now he's back on the right side of that top 50 bubble. He's up to 24th now. But we've seen so many times with elite level, with elite guys, that the difference between being a top 50 player and staying a top 50 player versus going in and out, and maybe you're into Doral, maybe you're not, you got to go to qualifying for the U.S. Open. You get into these events, it's a cycle that really just helps yourself, because then you get the free world ranking.
All of this sounds like an interesting segue to talk about the European Ryder Cup team.
There it is. Thank you, Nick. This is a tag team operation.
Speaking of guys who are not in the top 50 and who, therefore, are currently, well, it's not a direct correlation, but by virtue of their recent play, they are not currently qualified for this year's European Ryder Cup team.
It's early. We've got some time.
We've got a lot of time.
But the Europeans, as we said, they do realize it's a Ryder Cup year. They stomped the Asians in the Eurasia Cup. I love whoever came up with the branding and name of the Eurasia Cup, but that's okay. It works.
It's a little on the nose.
It works. 18.5 to 5.5. That is a beatdown right there.
It's called decisive.
Decisive is one way to put it. But you had the rising stars played really well. The trio of new English faces, Matt Fitzpatrick, Danny Willett, and Andy Sullivan, they all played really well. And you had Darren Clarke, who captained the team, and is going to captain the team at Hazeltine at the Ryder Cup. His two captains' picks of Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter both brought the veteran leadership. They both went undefeated. It was an ideal scenario for what Clarke wanted to get to really jumpstart the year for European golf.
Yeah, and right after he sort of hinted that those are two names that you might see this year at Hazeltine, regardless of whether they make the team on their own accord or Clarke has to pick them once again as captain's picks. He said a lot of the guys on the team, the younger guys, already sort of look up to them and that they were great in the locker room. And just to serve as leaders, and, you know, you can only have so many vice captains, but when you have guys with that much experience, it's just almost like adding to the captain's staff at that point. So a lot of young guys, though. And right now, if you look at the European Ryder Cup standings, this is a team you would not recognize.
Right.
We've got, 8 months left of qualifying?
So we got some time. This
is going to change. But, you know, if you look at this team right now, and we can just read off who's on there, you're going to recognize McIlroy, Stenson, Rose, and Dubuisson. But otherwise, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Andy Sullivan, Christopher Broberg, Chris Wood, Danny Willett, that is not...
Yeah.
That's not what you think of when you think of the Ryder Cup. You think of guys like Poulter, Westwood, Garcia, Donald, McDowell. None of them are on here. Jamie Donaldson, who played, you know, in 2014, still not on here.
Fought the chainsaw and lost.
The last two WGC winners. So, yeah, we'll get to the chainsaw.
Yeah.
I don't know why anybody keeps, any professional golfer keeps using a chainsaw.
Right.
But, you know, the last two WGC winners, Shane Lowry, Russell Knox,
yep.
Also guys who are not on this team if qualifying ended today. So it's certainly a, if the transition won't come for the Europeans in 2016, where this team looks markedly different, it will come just 2 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're going to, as you said, it's going to be like a 4-year process. We're going to see some significant turnover this year. A guy you mentioned, Luke Donald, he missed the team in 14, and I haven't seen anything out of him right now to make me consider him as a real realistic captain's pick.
You know, Sunday at Sony, he looked like he was going to have a sort of a backdoor top five. He was playing well.
The classic Luke Donald backdoor
nice,
top
nice
10.
Little birdie streak on the back nine, and then all of a sudden bogeys at 16 and 17, and you go from, oh, Luke Donald's going to backdoor top five, this to Luke Donald is 22nd all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, for a guy going through swing changes, it's got to be a positive to make 4 birdies in a row on the back nine Sunday.
Right.
But then you follow it up with 2 bogeys, and it's... You just have to wonder at some point, is it technical or is it mental with Luke Donald?
I would agree. But we will see. All right, well, let's shift focus now to what we've got looking ahead to this week. As we said, we have the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. Try saying that 5 times fast. Starts Wednesday night, 10 o'clock. Don't say it.
Okay.
I just said it once. That's
all
enough.
Right,
so. Wednesday, 10 o'clock Eastern on Golf Channel, where you have Ricky, Rory, and Jordan teeing it up. We also have the Career Builder Challenge. The PGA Tour heads back to the mainland out in La Quinta, California. 2 new courses in the 3-course rotation for fantasy people to pay attention to. It's more variables. It makes it great.
Can I say for no reason I would like this event to be 5 rounds again? Just so
you
we get scores at like 3,500 bucks.
I hated the 5-round tournament. It's just so
it's
unnecessary.
Like
that's incorrect. But why do you need 5 rounds for anything?
No, you don't. You don't.
Except Q School. I like Q School being... They can make Q School a month long, as far as I'm concerned. The guys wouldn't like it, but Also, the as we said, Bernhard Langer kicking off his new non-anchor Champions Tour season in Hawaii with the Mitsubishi Electric.
There's a guy who gets left out of the anchoring debate. We're always focused.
Oh, he's in it now.
We're focused on Adam Scott and other guys who, you know, are younger. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, he said he still doesn't know what's going on. He was talking this morning that he's got three styles of putters and he's going to take the first three tournaments of the year and maybe he switches it around, maybe he doesn't.
Yeah, do we now have to worry about the quiet dominance of Bernhard Langer falling by the wayside?
That's possible.
If there's two guys who could challenge him,
yeah,
I think it's Jeff Maggart and Colin Montgomery, just based on the major championships of success they've had in the last two years.
I agree with that.
Maggart wins two majors last year. I'm curious to see, because the ball striking is going to be there.
Yeah.
Langer clearly is as fit as anybody else, can continue on with that golf swing for years. But yes, you have to make putts. And suddenly for a guy who's been using that long putter for years, it's going to be difficult. That transition, even if at some point he figures it out,
yeah,
you have to wonder that it's going to be at least bumpy at the outset.
So 2 points on this. First off, as my producer in the ear is telling me, John Daly, Long John, turning the big 5-0 this year. So watch out, Champions Tour fans, one and all.
PGA Tour champions.
Yes, PGA Tour champions. I apologize. But, so I don't think he'll challenge
for the
Schwab Cup.
There's a shot in the arm, though.
I mean, that's going to be,
you know, watching Monty on major weekends is interesting because he now has that sort of different dynamic with the American crowd that's vastly different from when he was younger. But John Daly could certainly be a shot in the arm for the PGA Tour champions, Tour, whatever we want to call it. Second reference we can call it.
There you go. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, but it'd be nice because there are some guys who at 50 are still kicking it on the PGA Tour.
Yep.
You know, Vijay doesn't look like he's going anywhere anytime soon. Stricker still plays at a fairly high level, even though he's, you know, reduced his schedule. So it'll be nice to get somebody who hits 50 and immediately does want to go to the Champions Tour.
He has been waiting for the Champions Tour for
that
about
kind of popularity.
8 years. Yeah. The other second thing, real quick, before we move on, we were talking about anchoring. Can I tell you how annoyed I was with the Zach Blair, did he anchor, did he not, discussion?
This Sunday is going to be a problem.
Sunday night at Sony, the stroke is about intent, and we're going to be looking at high-res footage of every single player anytime the butt of a club brushes the edge of a shirt. Well, was he anchoring, was he not? I don't want to get too far into it. I just wanted to air my grievance and say
sorry for the audio-only people, but for those of us watching on video, we're both wearing pullovers right now.
It can happen.
The butt end of this club could brush up against a pullover, and then you don't know if a guy's anchoring. It's especially going to be a problem anytime there's bad weather. Guys wearing rain gear, how are you going to be able to tell? And Zach Blair, to his credit, seemed
surprised at the end.
It wouldn't even occur to him.
I'm just annoyed at the amount of time that golf fans and viewers and writers alike are going to lose to these stupid discussions of did he anchor, did he not, when 98% of the time.
Wasn't the only one either. There was questions about Shingo Katayama at the Eurasia Cup.
All right. I feel better having gotten that off my chest. Okay. I appreciate that. So let's move forward. As we said, Career Builder Challenge out in Palm Springs this week. Phil Mickelson making his first start since the President's Cup. He had some interesting comments earlier this week. This is his first start with Andrew Getson. He split in November with longtime swing coach Butch Harmon. Now he's got Andrew Getson as his swing consultant, coach, whatever term you want to use. 45 years old, hasn't won since the 2013 Open Championship. He said he's optimistic, but he's also nervous for this season. So what are your thoughts on Phil both this week and moving forward this year?
I think it's clear how badly he wants to make this Ryder Cup team based on the fact that, you know, he was the impetus for the task force.
Yep.
And you now have Tiger.
And he was the one that said, let's not count the fall events.
Right.
Which he got that to work, and now they're going to undo it.
He's had all the input.
Yeah.
And yet he is not one of the potential playing captains on this team. You know, Tiger's hurt, but, you know, says he wants to play. Jim Furyk could have to bow out because he wants to play. Phil was not named one of those vice captains.
Right.
It's clear he wants to make this on his own accord. He wants his, you know, his play to be the reason he's there. And, yes, he, you know, he had three top tens last year. He had the second place finish at the Masters that no one will remember because of Jordan Spieth. It's almost irrelevant. But this is a guy who, like you said, has not won since that British Open. And then right after that, he had that prolonged streak where he didn't even have a top 10 until his performance at the PGA in 2014. It stands to reason that, you know, not all of these guys can continue to compete at this level. He's 45 years old. At some point, he is going to fall off. And so if he makes this Ryder Cup team, it's very likely that this is his last Ryder Cup team. We know how much he loves these team events. This is important to him. And the interesting thing about Phil Mickelson as he's gotten older is that you can tell when he's motivated and invested and when he's not.
Yep.
And typically those weeks only pop up for majors now. We'll always be able to talk about the U.S. Open for as long as he's going to play it. That's the one that's gotten away. Six runner-ups
in the Open.
This is clearly a guy who's going to be motivated based on how much he loves these events. And so maybe on a week-to-week basis, we're going to see a more invested Phil Mickelson than we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years because he knows exactly what he's shooting for. It's not just a U.S. Open. It's not just another major. It's sort of a loftier goal where he needs consistent play.
I have a hard time envisioning this Ryder Cup team and Hazel team without Phil Mickelson playing, especially based on his level of play in Korea at the President's Cup, where he was a questionable pick and he played well. And so I think he's going to be there. And I do think that, you know, as we said before with narratives, I think that everyone's kind of penciling him in to be the captain in 2024 at Bethpage at a U.S. venue with the crowds. Everyone's going to be loving
Phil.
The
New York crowds have loved him in the past.
I think that if he's going to play his last one, I think he would rather play it in the States at Hazeltine than in outside of France or outside of Paris and at Le Golf National next in 2 years.
Here's a little bit of a left-footed question.
Left-footed. All right.
Who's got more pressure on them this year?
Okay.
And we can sort of pick apart what the reasons may be. Phil Mickelson.
Yep.
Rory McIlroy.
Oh, I think Phil, for sure. I think Phil has more pressure than a lot of guys this year. And so for me, my thought is, as we said, he hasn't won since Muirfield. And when he left the 72nd green at that event, the discussion was, here it is. Phil got the one that no one ever thought he would win. Will he win the career Grand Slam? How many more majors will he win? He was 42 at the time. It was a totally different trajectory of the discussion versus now, where he still hasn't won an event. If he goes through this year without winning a single tournament, the question will stand, do we think Phil Mickelson will ever win again on the PGA Tour, which is certainly far cry from any discussion we expected to have 3 years ago when he hoisted the Claret Cup.
Rory's problems would be a little more abstract if somehow Jordan Spieth, you know, put a gap between himself.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, Phil needs to play consistently, and he is starting to experience a decline in his results. And at his age, at his stage in the career, that it's not impossible to turn around, but it is more difficult.
We've got a lot of time to talk about this, seeing as how the Ryder Cup is not until, October?
October, Minnesota. So that's golf weather,
I'll just say it now in January. Based on what he did in Korea, holding out from two different bunkers, one of which was a fairway bunker, especially after he had that ridiculous one-ball snafu, this is a guy who has the raw talent to bring it whenever he is invested to do so. It's not going to be every week, but I do think that he could get excited for one more run in.
Oh, I agree.
Especially given his personal history at that event and certainly the U.S. recent team history.
Yes. Yes, there will be plenty of new blood, I think, but as you said, we got tons of time to talk about. All right, let's shift gears now. We're going to go into the shag bag. Nick, I hope you're ready for it. We discussed this earlier, but Jamie Donaldson, disabled list with a chainsaw. I'm using the Al Michaels terminology. He's out with a shoulder.
He's out with a chainsaw.
He said on Twitter he got in a fight with a chainsaw and he lost. I then added, I have yet to see someone win a fight with a chainsaw. So the chainsaw remains undefeated as far as I'm concerned. But he definitely took a hard hit to the finger, got a lot of stitches, didn't look very pretty.
Luckily, if we can use a luckily in this instance, it wasn't as bad as what Greg Norman did.
That's true. Greg Norman had a much worse chainsaw incident.
You know, professional golfer or not, to everyone listening at home, exercise care with your heavy machinery.
Yes, get a chainsaw supervisor
Maybe if you're making millions of dollars playing golf and your career depends upon your ability to
just make a fist. Grip a club. Get someone else. So do your chainsaw work.
Speaking of off the course activities.
Yes.
And heavy machinery in the home.
Look at you with the segues today.
Jordan Spieth picks up another. This isn't really an award or a trophy. It's just some real estate.
Some
pretty expensive real estate. Reportedly pays $7.1 million for Hunter Mahan's former Dallas mansion, area mansion.
It's looking swank. We're looking at the pictures here for those listening to the podcast. He's got the simulator, the ping pong table I really like.
The indoor basketball court. It's only half court, though. So
brick around the basketball court. It looks really
outside.
Nice.
And then the massive garage, the underground garage with the beautiful mural. of Augusta National.
It's really...
It almost seems like it was built for it.
A bargain at any price, I would say. So 7.1 when you're...
Originally on the market for more than 7.1, according to certain Dallas-based real estate.
Yes, well, when he's making $53 million a year, as he was reported to make last year, you can make a good...
I could do okay on like half of that, I think.
I can make it work. All right, so we're going to talk facial hair, because why not? So Boo Weekly and Graham Dillette both letting it go a little bit over the holiday season.
Yes.
Both showed up at Sony with a little extra on the chin. So who do you think shaves first, Boo or Canada's Finest?
Did a little research here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, digging deep. What do you got?
Deep. Went back through some old some photo files.
Okay.
Last time I could find evidence that Graham Dillette had shaved was at the Canadian Open. Last July,
yep.
Which you will remember he had to withdraw from, presumably
yes.
because he didn't have
the beard.
Right.
Yes.
So that was the last time I could at least find evidence
okay.
that one of them had shaved.
Yeah,
Boo,
I think...
Boo at least always seems to have the beard.
It depends on if you're calling it a full clean shave or a trim. Like Graham needs to trim it up a little bit. It's getting a little out of bounds. Boo, I think, just wants to let it go because Boo doesn't care. And Boo is very clear about his priorities, and they include fishing and golf.
And a future spot on Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, and the rest of it, you know, you can have it. But I think that Graham is more likely to incorporate the full but trimmed up beard moving forward.
He'll go in cycles. He will. He'll shave it off and grow it back out.
And this is about as much as I want to talk about other men's facial hair, by the way.
Guy coming up on his 34th birthday, by the way, Graham Dillette. Turns 34 Friday. If you could... You know, forecast the next 2 years for Graham Dillette, a guy who's come close to that PGA Tour victory a number of times. Where do you see this career going?
I'm concerned that his game has kind of fallen off in the last year or so. He did finish in the top 10 at the Sony this past week. That was his first top 10 since the Travelers in June. So he was always a guy that was a great ball striker, couldn't make the putts. Now the ball striking is starting to dip before the putts are coming up. So I have some questions, but it is interesting. He's one of those guys, you know, we talk about the Olympics with, you know, Fabian Gomez making a great run to solidify his spot on the Argentinian team after winning Sony. Graham Dillette and David Hearn are guys that are right now looking to book their tickets for Rio to represent Canada. So
if we can go back for just a moment.
Yes,
we were talking about the anchoring debate earlier, and we were talking about PGA Tour champions.
Yes.
When it comes to the struggles that Bernhard Langer might have with this putter, where would you say his odds are to win yet another Charles Schwab Cup?
I'd put him close to the favorite. I mean, let's say 7-1. I don't know. I mean, there's only a handful of guys that I think are really going to challenge him. I think his putting will fall off as he starts to get used to and acclimate himself to a new putter.
Ball strike enough to
the ball strike is enough to keep him up there. I really think that I think he'll be okay. So, as we said earlier on the Olympics, Fabian Gomez, Emiliano Grillo are currently slotted for Team Argentina. Any shot that Angel Cabrera, lurking about 170 spots down the list, could come up and snag one of those spots?
Yes. So
we got the Masters.
There is a shot.
We got the Masters. We got Oakmont hosting the U.S. Open. El Pato could come through.
The last time he won the Masters, was there anybody who really thought, like, we're hearing from Angel Cabrera again?
No, and no one thought that he was going to win the U.S. Open when he did either.
And considering his age, he can still push it out there. And at Augusta National, that kind of distance can make all the difference. I mean, we can see that that's kind of the beauty of Augusta. There are so many different ways to get it done. Jordan Spieth doesn't hit the ball a ton, wins. Zach Johnson, great wedge play, wins. Trevor Immelman, not a known bomber, wins. And then you have Bubba Watson and other guys who are going to move it out there. But I do think there is an outside shot.
Yeah. All right. That's all I'm
wondering. Is it likely? No. But I would not write off Angel Cabrera based solely on the fact that we've seen it before.
Yes. All right. Let's shift focus here to football real quick. AFC, NFC title games. What are your thoughts? We got New England at Denver, Arizona at Carolina. Give me winners.
I'm pained watching Peyton Manning at this point. So New England, I don't have any faith that Mr. Omaha can throw it past 5 yards.
I'm right there with you.
I am a little bit actually disappointed that we're going to get all this talk about Brady versus Manning. Who's the best all time? This is right now not a fair discussion because Peyton Manning is not even a shell of himself, and Tom Brady is still performing at a very high level. If he's not still in this, you know, if he's not still in his prime, he's in a very high post prime.
Right.
So let's go with New England. On the other side, this is a field goal game going to the home team, which, you know, on a neutral site means this is straight
one
up.
Flip. Hopefully the coin rotates.
I'm going to punt on this and focus instead on how shocked I am that Ron Rivera spent 2 to 3 years as the NFL's most fireable coach and is now suddenly a genius. If there was ever results-based analysis, I point you squarely to Riverboat Ron.
Yes, Riverboat Ron hosting the NFC title game. This is the world we live in. I agree with you. I think New England wins. I don't think it's going to be close. And I will take Arizona in the upset. I really like Bruce Arians. I like this
former
team.
Temple University coach.
There it is.
Bruce Arians.
Go
if
Owls.
I can squeeze that in there.
Yeah, that's fine. So I like Arizona. And one last one. You saw The Revenant this weekend. Does Leo get his Oscar this year? Yes or no?
No.
The drought continues.
I'm also disappointed.
Yes.
I absolutely recommend, if you have the constitution to sit through this one, it's a bit graphic.
But worth your time.
Yes. I would almost say that Tom Hardy steals the show from Leonardo DiCaprio in this one.
There you go. All right. Well, that concludes our Oscar.
A little
talk.
More dialogue might have had it for Leo.
All right. Golf fans, remember, once again, 10 o'clock Eastern, Wednesday night, live golf from Abu Dhabi and all week long. For Nick, I'm Will. This concludes our Tuesday edition of Monday Scramble. We'll be back next week to recap the Career Builder and Abu Dhabi. We'll see you then.